Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. Before we get started, I'd like to ask a favor. If you haven't done so already, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. If you've already done that, thank you. These ratings help the show get discovered so it can reach a wider audience. And while you're there, click the subscribe button so that you get notified of new episodes as soon as they come out. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can visit driveonpodcast.com/subscribe to find other ways of subscribing, including our email list. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, thanks for joining us. Today, my guest is Tracy Brown, and let me tell you, I am pretty excited about having her on. I'm excited about what we'll be talking about, of course, which we'll get into in a minute, but I'm also excited about checking the box for having a Coast Guard veteran on the show. Tracy is the first one to represent the Coast Guard on the Drive On Podcast, and so with this episode, I have spoken to someone from every branch of the U.S. military, with the exception of the Space Force, but that's relatively new, so we'll give them a little break there. But if anyone from the Space Force is listening, wants to join me on the podcast and talk about their epic ET battles or whatever, please reach out. That would be awesome, too. Anyway, so in addition to being a Coast Guard veteran, Tracy is also the number one best-selling author of Rescue to Recovery, a veteran's story of hidden scars and personal discovery. So, Tracy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your military background, and what it is that you do now?
I was in the Coast Guard a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. I went in 1983, which was interesting times, to say the least, as far as between drugs and you know, the Coast Guard was under the Department of Transportation in those days, so we didn't have a lot of funding, not like they do today. And then when I got out, I think I was in a place where a lot of people that get out are in, where you're really kind of, I used to tell people that I was absolutely bored, because you go from this high adrenaline, you know, especially I was on small boats, just to let you know, for the first couple of years, I was on small boats, and we did everything. I was up in San Francisco. We did everything from, you know, just regular cruising around, seeing if people are okay, safety stuff, to, you know, rescues, to fires on bridges, to picking up dead bodies. I mean, you name it, we did it. We did a lot. We wore a lot of hats, as I like to say. So there was a lot of adrenaline every time you were on duty. You had a lot of adrenaline going. So getting out, there was a big transition from being in this high adrenaline, you know, being able to jump off a boat at, you know, 15 knots and to, you know, civilian life, which is really a big shift. So I used to tell people that I was bored all the time. You know, it's just like, how are you? Well, I'm kind of bored, you know. Life is boring if you're not, you know, on the water. So I didn't realize, but for 30 years, I was undiagnosed with PTS. And I didn't understand, going through the process, I didn't understand why I was confused a lot, or I would lash out, or I would just go off on somebody. You know, there's a lot of anger, a lot of things going on that I wasn't aware of. And or aware of where it was coming from. You know, it's just like, gosh, you know, that was kind of stupid. That was really a knee-jerk reaction kind of thing. So so my journey really began when a friend of mine posted on Facebook of 16 characteristics of PTSD. And I've been a kind of an information hound, simply because I've always been trying to figure out, why am I not reacting to things like everybody else does? And so I read it and I'm like, I had 14 of the 16. And then going through certain therapies, I realized that there's a lot more. There's about 40 some odd characteristics that are pretty common. And so my journey really began, and the book really is about my journey, my process of realizing, okay, this is something I'm having to deal with. How do I deal with this? How do I go through this? And it was really just a process of, you know, learning to talk to people and seeking help for an issue. What I do now kind of fed into that, because what I do now is I'm a scar tissue therapist. I work on physical scar tissue to actually eradicate it from the body. Scar tissue is actually known as confused tissue. And so it made a lot of sense. I connected a lot of dots between the physical scar tissue and the mental scar tissue, the emotional scar tissue, that it's really confused tissue and you just need to reorganize it. So that's really where the journey began, was looking at, oh, this is what I'm doing in the physical world and how this is applying to my emotional state.
Yeah, that's a great background story and how, and I think a lot of other veterans can probably relate to the experience that you had where, you know, life just sort of seems boring after getting off that high intensity type of job, you know, where maybe it's a combat operation where your head's on a swivel constantly and you're looking for these threats all the time. And then a short time later, you come back home and you're walking into a Walmart or something. And it's, you know, you don't necessarily need to have that same level of intensity going to the grocery store or to, the mall or whatever the case may be. You still have that though. And, but life just sort of seems boring because it's not the same as what it was. It's kind of interesting. So you had undiagnosed post-traumatic stress from your time in the military. So how did you cope with that? What kind of were the steps that you went through to kind of cope with that?
Yeah, in the beginning, you know, it was more of a numbing situation. I would drink a little bit and do everything I could to shut my brain off, because for me, it was really the rescues that turned into recoveries, hence the name of the book, Rescued Recovery. On small boats back in those days, you had a much slower response time than you would on a helicopter, or even these days, they've got much faster boats these days. Back then, you know, the boat could probably do 25 knots, but they really didn't recommend it. But it could move. It was a fast moving boat. But, you know, San Francisco is a big bay. So 9 times out of 10, we'd be late. You know, you're always late. You're preparing for a rescue. You're preparing. You've got all your contingencies. Okay, we're going to do this if they're in this condition. We're going to do this if they're in that condition. And you've got this all prepared. And lo and behold, you either go in for a body or you just don't find anything. You know, so that kind of wear and tear on soul is very, very damaging. And so I started realizing that's where that came from. And you bury those things. You know, we're taught very much so in the military, you know, especially initially, you know, you don't ask questions, you just follow orders, you know, you just don't ask questions, you just do. And, you know, we would not do any kind of briefings. We would briefing case go, well, this and this and this went wrong. We never talked about emotions. You know, we never talked about, well, feel after picking up that, you know, those bodies and how do you feel about doing that? You just buried it and moved on. So I coped many times just trying to quiet the voices in my head, if you will. I would, you know, I drank a lot and just to numb it. I just wanted to numb it. I didn't want to hear that stuff in my head. I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to hear it and see it. And I had a lot of nightmares. I had nightmares and night sweats, I guess, or night terrors, as they called it, for a good 10 to 15 years. And so, you know, you struggle with, one of the struggles with PTS is lack of sleep, because usually you try not to go to sleep because you don't want to close your eyes because there's going to be a nightmare. Or when you get to sleep, you don't sleep well. And so that lack of sleep is really a huge thing that, you know, domino effects to irritability, anger, you know, quick to fire off on things, you know, an inability to really take things in. And plus your PTS, you're in a constant state of fight, flight, or freeze. So there's a lot of things physiologically going on with you that you don't even realize, you know, on a physiological level. So there's a lot of stuff. So my coping mechanism was to shut it off initially, because there was 1987. I got out in 87 and nobody was really talking about PTSD. Nobody was talking about, oh, how's your mental health? You know, I mean, my first resume, it's like, what skills do you have? And I put, you know, I'm an expert with a 45. That's not going to get you a lot of gigs, you know? I mean, right. It's just like a friend of mine sent me down, you don't put that on a resume, but you know, in the military, that's a skill set.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
It's crazy. So
yeah. So
how I coped.
So you coped by basically shutting everything off. And how did that allow you to function with this in, I don't know, in society, at work, with your friends and family, things like that? What was
not
that like?
Well, not well. I mean, you're it's kind of like, you know, I felt like I was walking around numb, you know, even if I didn't, you know, numb it with something, I was still kind of in this numb state where I just didn't want to feel, because I actually felt that point in time that if I were actually to even explore what was going on in my head, I wouldn't be able to function at all in society. So I was in family and friends and society, I was in a place where I'm barely functioning now. I'm just getting through each day. Every day was just, I just want to get through today. And, you know, that's going from a place where you're actually a contributor and doing things to help people and serve people to a place where I just want to get through today. That in and of itself starts another spiral. So, you know, I'm very fortunate. I have an amazing family. I have an amazing group of friends. They just didn't know what was going on in my head. So in the book, the part of the process was really figuring out how to talk about what was going on, knowing or thinking that what is feeling like it's destroying me, I can't talk about it to somebody else because I think it'll destroy them. And so my fear was, one of the big fears that I didn't even realize was a fear, but I didn't want to hurt anybody else with the pains that I was feeling,
right,
with the burdens that I had. I didn't want to put the burden on them. So how do you reconcile that? And so for many, many, many years, I just got through the nightmares, got through the days, just kind of trying to figure out how to navigate life. And then that post, probably about 10 years, maybe 12 years ago now, that post was just like, oh shit, maybe there's something really going on here that I should probably take a look at. And so it was a journey of really, okay, how do I talk about this? I don't know how to do this.
Right. Absolutely. And that makes a lot of sense. And so was that the tipping point for you when you saw that Facebook post that you, that made you go and, seek out the help? Was that kind of that
It was actually the seed. It was a seed that was planted, because when I saw that, meeting, I was like, oh, this is very interesting. And all of a sudden you get that oh shit moment and you're like, oh, wait a minute, there's something going on here. And, you know, and I had a job, you know, and it's just like, I need to go to work now kind of thing. And you set it aside, but it's a seed that's planted inside of me. And so I had the seed that was, there's some things that I need to look at. I don't know how to look at that. And I don't know if I'm going to survive looking at that, because you feel like it's whatever it is that's going on in you is killing you. And so I don't know if I put something else on top of that. If that's just going to be the last straw, then somebody just lock me up, you know, put me somewhere that I'm not going to hurt me or somebody else, or shut down. So, you know, through certain friends and a desire, I guess I had a real desire to contribute to life. I really wanted to be a part of something, but I couldn't get out of myself. So it was a seed that was planted, and, you know, and like any seed, there's always water that comes along with it. So there would be another watering and another watering and another watering. And, you know, as I decided to move forward in business and stuff, I was really realizing that I would get so far in something and that I couldn't quite break through to the other side. I'd either give up or whatever. And so it's like, and I just finally got really, really frustrated with that. And also I had been told that I didn't have benefits through the VA. So that was another thing. I didn't have any resources or any place to turn for help that somebody would maybe understand that. So, you know, serendipitously, people would come into my life, and somebody finally about 3 or 4 years ago came along and said, by the way, and she was an advocate, and I'd be happy to, you know, help anybody to talk to either that person or a veteran service organization. But if you don't even think you have benefits, you probably do. If you have benefits. In 87, actually 89 was the first time that I actually called the VA, because somebody said, you know, you do have benefits. And I'm like, okay. So I called, and I called several times, but have come to learn that the VA was pretty disrepair back then. And a friend of mine, he's a Purple Heart recipient, he's so funny. He's like, I'm surprised they even answered the phone in 1989. But But they were like, you know, I said, well, I the benefits and they give them the stuff. And they go, well, you're not in our system. I'm like, well, I served my country. I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know that you have to go from the military end of things to the civilian end of things, which is the VA. You've got to make that bridge. Nobody right. told me that. I thought you just kind of went in. And so for years, I believed that I didn't even have benefits because I was told by the VA that I wasn't in their system.
Yeah, and that's something that I think a lot of people transitioning out of the military, I think it's probably better now, but especially back then and even before, people just didn't realize that they necessarily had benefits or what those benefits were that they did have. And even for myself, when I was getting out of the military, I knew I had some benefits. I had served in Afghanistan. I had done a deployment. Mm-hmm. I knew I had some benefits, through my service, but I couldn't put them out there and say, okay, this is what I have available to me.
Right. You had no idea.
I almost had the feeling like I had to sort of just try and apply for certain benefits and see if mm-hmm. I got accepted. And if I did, then apparently I have access to those benefits. And if I didn't, well, then apparently I don't,
I did, right.
So where did you end up going for help for your PTSD? Did you end up discovering that you did have the benefits through the VA or did you end up going someplace else?
I actually ended up going through the VA, finally. A friend of mine, like I said, she helps veterans transition from military to civilian life. And she's like, I'm telling you, you have benefits. And here's the path. This got to go through here to get in there and then go in there. And I'm like, oh, so, she showed me the hoops and I jumped through. And I have to say, they have some really great services for people that are dealing with PTS. They're so specific. They get it. And mind you, some are better than others. I'm very fortunate. The VA here in Long Beach, I'm in Long Beach, California. And the VA here is phenomenal. They have an amazing mental health center. And I would not have been able to write a book. I would not be able to do these podcasts. I wouldn't be able to do any of this. I'd still be basically trying to get through each day. And I really appreciate what they do, and like any government agency, they really need a kick in the pants to get their shit together, but they're getting there, So right. I encourage anybody. It's just like, even if you have served, just go talk to a veteran service organization, just look up VSO online and you will find one, and they are there to serve you. They're not a part of the VA, but they work with the VA. And that's a great place to start.
Yeah, and a lot
if you're
of
not
these
sure about your benefits, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of these veteran service organizations, they like you said, they're not a part of the VA, but they work with the VA, and they have people there who know the tricks and know all the loopholes and all this.
Yep.
They know what hoops to jump through for your particular situation. So reach out to them because they can be a tremendous help to you, especially. When you're trying to figure this stuff out on your own and
right.
they write things in confusing language and it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to you. Your situation might be a unique situation and, do I qualify in this case? And, talk to somebody who's been there, who knows, who's helped other people go through this type of stuff. There's
absolutely,
there's a page on the VA's website, that has a list of veteran service organizations. It's actually like a PDF file that that they update on a regular basis with a list of approved VSOs that can work with the VA and things like that. And there's all sorts of organizations. There's dozens of them. So check out that page and see if you can look up an organization that might be near you or whatever. I know, American Legion or VFW posts, they can probably point you in the right direction if they don't have someone there themselves, but they can definitely help you out with that type of stuff too. Let's switch gears a little bit here. So you got, you went mm-hmm. to go get help and back in the days of your military career, there was definitely a stigma around mental health. And there was a lot of the just toughen up and stick it out, you know,
suck it up,
that type of thing.
Yeah.
So I want to say that things have probably gotten a little bit better than it was back then these days, but there's still a little bit of that attitude lingering around, especially in the military. Sure. So there's a stigma there surrounding post-traumatic stress and stuff like that. So what would you say to someone mm-hmm. who feels like they need help, but don't want that negative stigma attached to them?
I completely understand. I was there myself. It's just like, I don't want the label of TS hanging over my head. And I think part of it is definitions. I'm big on definitions in my life. And one of the things that you see PTSD and it's post-traumatic stress disorder. And I think we say in that disorder part, and actually it really is just PTS. Everybody, every human being, and even animals deal with stress after a trauma. Everybody does. We do it. We deal with it physically, physiologically, emotionally. We deal with it on every level. There is always some kind of stress after a trauma. Now, whether it's ongoing, whether it's a chronic thing, or whether it's a depending upon the trauma, and you can't judge a trauma. What I go through is completely different. I mean, we can go through the same trauma. We can experience it differently because everybody's different. And so one of the things that I did for a long time, I thought, you know, I wasn't in combat. I mean, I wasn't getting shot out of mine. You know, what do I have to be traumatized about? You know, and I judged myself on the things I went through. You know, for me, you know, for somebody, picking up a dead body may not bother them, but, you know, pick up a 50 or 100 of them and you might be, you know, or right. not. But everybody deals with their traumas differently. So the first thing I would say to anybody, it's like, don't judge it. Don't put the judgment on the trauma. Look at where you are and look at how you're functioning. And if you're not functioning, you know, I just looked around me and I'd go through a situation where there was somebody in traffic, whatever it was, you know, my reactions were not the same as other people. You know, in Maine, it wasn't generally the same. It wasn't, you know, I would fly off the handle for something that just, it's like, really, that was a big reaction to that, you know? So self-awareness is a big thing, but don't judge yourself. I would say don't put it, try not to put a stigma on it. Try to understand that you are a human. Asthma, stress after is very normal. Just like fight, flight, or freeze, it's a normal thing that we go through. And some people sit in it for a week or a day or a year or years. But don't put a judgment on it. It's, you know, I don't like to say don't, but try not to. Mm-hmm. Try to understand that, you know, one of the tools that I used was somebody told me, it's like, would you talk to a 5-year-old the way that you're talking to yourself? You know, your inner talk. If you know, you should be over this. Was 30 years ago, you know, you get over it. And you know, it's like, I would never say that to a 5-year-old. Oh, you know, you skinned your knee. That happened like 5 minutes ago. Forget about it. Get over it. I would never talk to a 5-year-old like that, you know?
Right.
So maybe talking to ourselves a little more kindly is a way to kind of navigate. But that's always been a tough one for me, because I've always, you know, tough love, suck it up and deal with it and move on. But you can't, because you've got this block.
Right, exactly. And I think I've talked about this in other episodes, but if you are having a problem of any sort, you know, whether mm-hmm. you broke your arm or you had a concussion exactly. or whatever, you're going to stop and you're going to take care of yourself. And it's not selfish to do that. It means, like, you know, if your job is to lift heavy things and move them and you have a broken arm, well, I hate to break the news to you, you're probably not going to be able to do your job very well. So if you take right. the time to go and heal your arm the proper way, you'll be able to get back to work much quicker and not have lingering problems that are associated with that. It just, I mean, to me, that just makes sense. Now, if yep. you have a job where you're seeing dead bodies every day, or maybe not every day, but, you know, on a regular enough basis, and you have to pull them out of the water and you're dealing with terrible fires and other things like that, whether it's a first responder or military mm-hmm. or whatever the case may be, you have to sort of prepare yourself for that. You know, it's going to come at some point. You don't know when or where. And that's another issue too, that could come up is that surprise factor is, you know, you might, you know, in your case, you might have pulled up to a situation where you were expecting that there would be some survivors and turns out there were none. And, you know, that's a surprise and it's a shock to your system as well. But you know, if you didn't take the time to build up that resiliency in your own mind, then it's going to be harder to bounce back from that. And same thing going forward, you know, once when you've experienced that trauma, that seeing the dead bodies or, you know, whatever the situation was, you know, going forward, it's going to be hard to do your job knowing that I might be rolling up on a scene where there's more dead bodies and I don't want to deal with that. You know, so if you're not able to handle that in a healthy manner, it's going to make it hard for you to do your job. And hopefully people hear that message, especially in people who might be in a leadership position where they might have subordinates under them who might be dealing with this type of situation where they've had exposure to traumatic events. And you want those people to be able to do their job and do a good job at it. And if they are dealing with the mental health issues on top of also doing this difficult job, they're probably not going to do as good of a job as they would if they were able to in a healthy way handle the mental health issues.
That's absolutely right. I don't know. I think for us to be really helpful in this world and a contributor in this world, it's really important for us to allow our leaders and allow those first responders and allow these people that are serving us to be served without stigma.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. So what did you end up doing after, you know, going through your treatment, to be able to reconnect with people or find a purpose in your own life?
That's a great question. It's really interesting because it took a lot. Once I went through the therapy that I went through, I felt as though I didn't have to keep a secret anymore. I don't know if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But the trauma and all the stuff and all the pains that I was going through, there's a lot of shame around that. So you tend to hide those things. And so you're never allowed to fully be seen. There's a great woman who's got a really wonderful thing called Call to Courage. Her name is Brené Brown, and you've probably heard of her, but she has one of the greatest things. When I heard that, it was like, oh my gosh, the only way that we can really reconnect to people is to allow ourselves to be seen, is to see others and be seen, because otherwise relationships don't go very deep. And for many years after getting out of the Coast Guard, people could only see so much of me. I'd only let them see so much because of the shame that I had around all the other crap. You know, it's like, okay, you can see this part of me. You can see where I'm doing well, you know, and I'm working out and I'm doing this, but you don't get to see these dark places. You don't get to see this stuff, which unfortunately was a very large part of my existence at that point in time. And so they only got to see a small portion of me. So the reconnecting is really in the being seen. And that's really, really scary when you've got what you think are a lot of secrets, even though I you know, talk to my friends and they're like, yeah, there was something going on there, but you know, but I was pretty much oblivious to it. So allowing, you know, seeing myself first and learning about that helped me to take the steps to allow myself to be seen. And in that came the connection.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I tried to do on this podcast by sharing stories like yours, to allow people to be seen, to be heard, I guess in this case, but to share their stories and their side of things. And we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, but that lets people realize that they're not alone. You know, other people who are hearing these stories, they might resonate with a story like yours, for example, or mine, or any of the other guests that I have on this show, they might resonate with that and realize that they're not alone, that there are other people who have experienced these same types of traumas. And there are things that can be done to get you through this. Yeah. You know, these issues are temporary. We can get you through this, get the help that you need to get you over that hurdle. And a lot of times people might see them as being, a permanent situation where they're never going to fix this situation. They're never going to get better or whatever, but you know, with the right treatment, whether it's, therapy or, medications or, things like that, you can usually get through a lot of this stuff, and live a happy life and not have to suffer. Absolutely. with what it is that you're dealing with. So,
Yeah. One of the things that I, mentioned in the book and even mentioned with people I know, it's, even if the thought of therapy is scary to you, I encourage people, it's like, find someone you trust and at least talk to them. You know, start with a baby step, start somewhere, but talk to somebody, tell somebody your pain, tell somebody your shame, or, but talk to somebody, or your fears, and find somebody that will be kind to you and try it. Because I'm telling you, just saying things out loud, and it sounds that whole cliche, it's like, oh, you're not alone. It seems so cliche to me for so many years, but really, you're not. And knowing that somebody else has gone through this is a huge comfort. It's hugely beneficial. But just saying things out loud takes a weight off of you. It takes this burden, and it lightens it. And yeah, every time, for sure, you say it, it lightens the burden more. And if you can get somebody that understands and can navigate you through that, it lightens the burden even more. And so if we can keep lightening this burden, I just think that our veterans and our first responders have so much more to give and so much more to serve. And I think they have so much more that they want to give and serve. And they feel, I was shut down. I was boxed in. I didn't know how to express myself anymore. And just getting that freedom was huge.
And I know from my own personal experience, when I first got back from Afghanistan, I was having a rough time, and I ended up calling the vet center to get some help, to talk with someone. And just the act of picking up the phone and calling and making an appointment and verbalizing, like, I'm having a tough time, and talking about what it was that I was kind of going through. When I hung up that phone, I felt like a weight was lifted off my shoulders. Like, I'm not carrying this by myself anymore. Someone else is there. That's their job. They're there to help you, and they're happy to do it, and help you through the situation that you're going through. And as soon as I hung up that phone, it really did feel like a big weight was lifted off my shoulders. Didn't mean that I was, instantly cured or, in a
right.
magical sense or anything like that. But it was like, I still have to carry this thing, but I don't have to carry it alone anymore. I have somebody else who can help me out and carry it. So it's not quite as heavy of a load to carry anymore. So,
first step of a journey. Yeah.
I really do encourage people to, follow in your footsteps, follow in my footsteps, and just, pick up the phone or, whatever, schedule an appointment, with someone, or, if you don't want to, go that route, do like what you said, talk to a friend or find somebody that you can trust that you can talk to and have a conversation like that,
Yeah. It's awesome.
So Tracy, it has been a pleasure speaking with you today and hearing about your story and your background and the journey that you went through. But I briefly mentioned in the beginning that you have written a book and that you have out there. And I'd like for you to maybe tell us a little bit about that book and let people know where they can go to find out more about it and where to get the book.
Yeah. Yeah, the book is called Rescue to Recovery, a veteran story of hidden scars and personal discoveries. And it really is that, just that. It's my journey on how I came to kind of understand where I was and get through it. And it was the beginning. It's the beginning, really. I mean, I believe that we all have a purpose on this planet. And a lot of times these traumas are what shut us down. And so the book is my journey, but it's the beginning part of the journey. And to me, the whole point is to reconnect with family, with friends, with life, with dreams, with things that we want to do, and the reconnection. And really it all comes down to, you know, I think we all have a dream or a desire or something that we want to accomplish in this life, even if it's just, I just want to, you know, breathe and be free and not have pain, you know, in my heart. That's a great aspiration, but it all comes down to, you know, once you realize that, and I think, and it's not just the first responders, I think a lot of people have a lot of traumas that they're dealing with or not dealing with that are holding them back from the greater things that they can do in their life. And so, you know, the book is the journey, but at the end of the book is the question of, you know, what do you want? You know, what do you want in this life? And what do you want in this time that you're here? And you know, legally and ethically and morally, what are you willing to do to get it? You know, right. For me, it's like, I wanted more. I wanted more than just the pain. I wanted more than just the nightmares. I wanted more than just getting through the day. I wanted to be able to contribute somehow. And I think, you know, our first responders and our veterans are those people that stepped up already. You know, they really wanted to be a part of something. They really wanted to help. They really wanted to serve. And I think that they still have that desire in them, but they've been shut down by these traumas. So, you know, let's take a look at the traumas, get that out of the way so we can move forward into the things that we really want, and then define, what do you want? You know, so my life is, you know, really shifted from, you know, I wrote the book because I really want people to start asking that question. What do you want? And what am I willing to do to get it? And, you know, so now I not only have the book, but I do consulting. I help people find their path, and I help people find, you know, ways to express that stuff, you know, different paths. And it's like, hey, you know, this is a way that you can go that you can really contribute, or that you can do this and really contribute. And so, you know, it's just been a natural progression for me to serve in that way. So yeah, the book is a journey, and it kind of gives some practical things. There's some stories, there's some Coast Guard stories in there, because, you know, you can't write a book without story. Right. And so there's some good stories in there. And, you know, I hope it really just helps people to go first, you know, like you said, understand that they're not alone, that this is really normal stuff. You know, stress after trauma is normal. Fight, flight, or freeze are normal. These are normal physiological and emotional reactions. So you're not crazy. You're not, you know, different than everybody else. You're just dealing with it the way that you're dealing with it. And there is help for that. And so that's the hope of the book, to help people to go, you know what? I can do this. And not only that, I can actually go back to my dreams and, you know, follow them. So that's my hope.
That's great. And where can people go to find out more about, like where to get the book and, the consulting work that you do?
Yeah, they can go to my website. It's www.rescue2recovery.com. They can go there, and, the book is for sale there, and it gets fulfilled. And also they can contact me and if they want to talk or go through some consulting. And I'm pretty reasonable as far as my fees are concerned, so I don't like to kill people with stuff like that.
Right.
So yeah, they just contact me, send me an email, and we start the process that way.
Perfect. Okay. And yeah. And there's going to be links to all of this in the show notes too, so anyone who is in the car driving, please don't get into an accident trying to write this stuff down.
Exactly. You
can click on it later. So, yeah. So thank you again for joining us and sharing your story and telling us about your journey that you went through. So thank you again.
Thank you so much, Scott. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.